exegesis of the Holy Quran.
In the name of Allah, the Supporter, O He who makes the blood run into my veins, O Chief, O Master, it is He whom I desire. O Lord, Thy servant has no strategy, has nothing of his own, has no control over loss, nor over profit.
Ya Habib, Ya Habib, Ya Habib, man, Ya Habib.
Assalamualaikum, respected brothers and sisters. Welcome to the 25th episode of the program Exegesis of the Holy Quran, expertised by Hujjatul Islam Dr. Reza Bakhshayesh. This program is being broadcast to you from the Call of Islam Radio, the Islamic Republic of Iran.
که درمانش تو باشی یا خوش راهی که پایان تو باشی یا
In the previous program, the expert started commentating on verse 23 of Surah An-Nisa, but the remaining points were postponed to this episode. The verse reads,
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم حرمت عليكم أمهاتكم وبناتكم وأخواتكم وعماتكم وخالاتكم وبنات الأخ وبنات الأخت وبنات الأخ وبنات الأخت وأمهاتكم اللاتي أرضعنكم وأخواتكم من الرضاعة وأخواتكم من الرضاعة وأمهات نسائكم وربائبكم اللاتي في حجوركم من نسائكم اللاتي دخلتم بهن فإن لم تكونوا دخلتم بهن فلا جناح عليكم وحلائل أبنائكم الذين من أصلابكم وأن تجمعوا بين الأختين إلا ما قد سلف إن الله كان غفورا رحيما
Forbidden to you are your mothers and your daughters and your sisters, and your paternal aunts, and your maternal aunts, and brothers' daughters, and sisters' daughters, and your mothers that have suckled you, and your foster sisters, and mothers of your wives and your stepdaughters who are in your guardianship, born of your wives to whom you have gone in. But if you have not gone into them, there is no blame on you in marrying them. And the wives of your sons, who are of your own loin, and that you should have two sisters together, except what has already passed. Surely Allah is forgiving, merciful. The point Dr. Bakhshayesh regarded as the first was that mother-in-law becomes haram even before an intercourse between man and his wife, while the wife's daughter gets haram only after an intercourse between the man and the daughter's mother. Then the phrase fi hujurikum implies that a man should protect and respect his stepdaughter as her real father. Finally, when someone's stepson gets married, his wife would be halal for him after the son passes away or gets divorced. Such woman was forbidden to marry in the pre-Islamic era. Three messages are conveyed by the ayah, the first of which is that Allah has set down a set of family and marital rules. The second one is that some women are haram due to blood relations, while others are so because of marriage. And at last, since Allah's system of laws is based on mercy, His new conventions do not include the past cases. Finally, the expert turned to verse 24 and began commentating on that. It reads,
Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim. Wal muhsanatu minan nisa'i illa ma malakat aymanukum kitaballahi 'alaykum. وأحل لكم ما وراء ذلكم أن تبتغوا بأموالكم محصنين غير مسافحين فما استمتعتم به منهن فآتوهن أجورهن فريضة ولا جناح عليكم فيما تراضيتم به من بعد الفريضة إن الله كان عليما حكيما.
And all married women, except those whom your right hands possess, this is Allah's ordinance to you. And lawful for you are all women besides those, provided that you seek them with your property, taking them in marriage, not committing fornication. Then, as to those whom you profit by, give them their dowries as appointed, and there is no blame on you about what you mutually agree after what is appointed. Surely Allah is knowing, wise. First of all, Dr. Bakhshayesh had a glance at its occasion of revelation and stated that it was revealed after a war between Muslims and infidels concerning female prisoners of war. Then he listed 6 points regarding the verse. First, it's haram to marry a married woman except those who are captivated as prisoners of war. Their captivation is considered as their divorce. Second, the term muhsan has got 2 meanings in the Quranic terminology, a married woman and a free woman. Here, the first meaning is denoted. Third, no one is allowed to modify divine rules. This is understood from the phrase, kitab Allahi alaykum. Fourth, primarily, men are free to marry every woman, except those disallowed by Allah. Fifth, the fact that marriage should be with chastity and purity, not with indecency, infers that it's not just for sexual desire. And finally, to marry war slaves is a way to protect helpless women and their children as an emergency ruling. In this episode, you will hear the rest of the commentary on this verse.
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم الحمد لله رب العالمين والصلاة والسلام على أشرف الأنبياء والمرسلين حبيب إله العالمين أبي القاسم محمد وعلى أهل بيته الطيبين الطاهرين سيما بقية الله في الأرضين الحجة ابن الحسن روحي له الفداء. Dear audience, we were on chapter Nisa, verse 24, and we have not finished.
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم والمحصنات من النساء إلا ما ملكت أيمانكم كتاب الله عليكم وأحل لكم ما وراء ذلكم أن تبتغوا بأموالكم محصنين غير مسافحين فما استمتعتم به منهن فآتوهن أجورهن فريضة ولا جناح عليكم فيما تراضيتم به من بعد الفريضة إن الله كان عليما حكيما.
We were on point number 6. Quran believes that the relation between men and women should be either in a marriage or in property. It means slavery, either in the case of marriage or in the case of ownership. A man can have a relation with a woman and he should pay the dowry. The other point is that this part of the verse, فَمَسْتَمْتَعْتُمْ بِهِ مِنْهُنَّ فَآتُوهُنَّ أُجُورَهُنَّ فَرِيضَةً. There is a difference between the Shiites and the Sunnites concerning the interpretation of this verse. The Sunnis, because they have prohibited temporary marriage, they don't believe that this verse is talking about temporary marriage. But the Shiites, on the contrary, because they believe that temporary marriage is mentioned in the Quran, this is the particular verse to which the Shiites refer in order to prove that Quran has talked about temporary marriage. And this is part of the verse that in particular announce a lawful marriage, the temporary marriage. First, I explain about the word mut'ah. Mut'ah in the terminology of Islamic studies is used in two cases. One in mut'atul nisa and one in mut'atul hajj. Mut'atul hajj, those who go on the pilgrimage to Mecca, as they know that there is a tawaf, which is known tawaf al-nisa. They have to perform it as mut'atul hajj. But mut'atul nisa means a temporary marriage, and it does not mean permanent marriage. And concerning this verse, the Shiites argued that this verse should talk about and deal with temporary marriage, because the verse of Quran tells us, for the enjoyment you have had from them, from your wives, thereby you must give them the dowry as an obligation. So, you know, this is, the Quran says, after the enjoyment or because of the enjoyment, you have to give the women their dowries. This is peculiar to temporary marriage, not permanent marriage, because in permanent marriage, the dowry is necessary. The husband is expected to give the dowry to the women, and it is not dependent on the enjoyment, whether it happens or it does not happen. And we know that as soon as the formula of marriage is said by the lawyer, it is necessary at least for half of the dowry to be given to the wife, even before sexual intercourse. Or before enjoyment, it is necessary that this dowry be given to the wife. But this part of it says, after the enjoyment, you must give them the dowry. This is peculiar rulings of temporary marriage. And also we have traditions from the Imams of Ahlul Bayt that approve this. And also there is tradition from Imam Sadiq, peace be upon him, who said, the rule of mut'ah is revealed in Quran. And Imam, as a matter of fact, means this part of the Quran. And Imam said, the sunnah, the line of conduct of Holy Prophet, followed the verse of Quran. Another point here concerning temporary marriage is that we learn from this language of the Quran that the very temporary marriage was taken for granted even when this verse was revealed. The only thing that we learn from this verse is that it is necessary for the husband to give the dowry to the women after enjoyment, because it may happen that a man married temporarily a woman and after enjoyment he denied the wife her dowry. So this verse was revealed to express the commandments or the rule of Allah, and that is, it is necessary that after enjoyment you have to give them their dowry after enjoyment. So the very temporary marriage was taken for granted by this verse. The only thing which is expressed by this verse is that it is necessary to give them their dowry. And also we learn from the Shiites and Sunnite collections of hadith and also history that the rule of temporary marriage was there at the time of Holy Prophet himself, and the first Muslims at the beginning of Islam, they used to practice it. And we know that there is no decisive evidence or phrasing from the Quran or the Sunnah of Holy Prophet to abrogate this, and because of that we follow and we practice it. And we know the only difference between the Shiites and Sunnites concerning temporary marriage is only the word of the second caliph, who said at his time, mut'atan kanata ala ahdi rasulillah wa ana uharrimuhuma wa uaqibu alayhima mut'atun nisa wa mut'atul hajj. There was two kinds of mut'ah at the time of Holy Prophet. I am the one who prohibit these two mut'ah, and I punish anybody who practiced them, mut'atun nisa and mut'atul hajj. And this is a very celebrated phrasing and word from Umar, both in the Shiites and the Sunnites at this time, that he said, I am the one who prohibit these two kinds of mut'ah. And the very nice points here is that from this very wording of Umar, we understand that mut'atun nisa and mut'atul hajj, but here we are talking about mut'atun nisa. Mut'atun nisa was practiced at the time of Holy Prophet. Even we learn from the connotation of this words of Umar that he says mut'atan kanata ala ahdi rasulullah. It means there were two kinds of mut'ah which was practiced at the time of Holy Prophet. So this is a confession of the leader of the Sunnites, who said these two mut'ah were practiced by the Muslims, and I am the one who prohibit these two mut'ah. And the Sunnah, they know that if they do not perform mut'ah, they do not practice mut'ah because they want to follow this prohibition. But the Shiites, because they believe that the only person who has the right to tell the rule of Allah must be somebody permitted from Allah to make something necessary or wajib, or make something haram or prohibited, and it was Holy Prophet or somebody permitted by Holy Prophet. And we know for sure that no rule or no prohibition has issued from Prophet or from Quran, neither from Quran nor from the Holy Imams, to prohibit this temporary marriage. And because of that, we believe that it is lawful and it is necessary and it should be done in the society. The other point here is that after this argument in jurisprudence concerning whether it was allowed or not allowed in the book of Allah, we come to theology and we discuss and deal with the reasons beyond the temporary marriage. Because of them, Allah has made it lawful. What are they? We believe that first, there are natural instincts in human being that Allah for good and according to His discretion has put inside the soul or nature of human being, and one of them is the sexual instinct, which should be answered and responded. So we believe that these natural instincts and desires should be answered correctly and reasonably. The second reason is that the system of rules should be in such a way that prevent corruption. So there must be way for people in order to answer their natural desires in a correct way. But if, for example, these natural way are blocked, so people have no choice except for corruption. So in order to prevent society from corruption or to diminish these natural desires, this temporary marriage should be there as a lawful way. And also another thing, it happens for every member of the society to go on a long trip, for example, for a year or for 2 months or 3 months or a thing like that. So somebody may go for travel abroad, for example, for any reason, for business or for education and things like that. But when somebody is abroad, he is not able to marry permanently, and he is under the pressure of this sexual desire. So the only way is to save him from this pressure by temporary marriage. And also another thing which should be taken into consideration is that permanent marriage has heavy and difficult situation, which is for both husband and wife. For example, a husband is necessary for him, and he is obliged to provide for the providence and the livelihood of the wife and the household. And also there are many other responsibilities, both for the husband and the wife, should be provided by both of them. But in temporary marriage, there are no these kind of conditions. And because of that, the reason and wisdom beyond temporary marriage is that to let somebody free from the pressure of this sexual desire in a lawful way. Because if there is no lawful way open in front of people, they may be deviated from the right path or resort to the wrong way. And also there is another reason, that is society of today. The society of today, which is different from yesterday, because today we know by the means of technology, people, they can see through internet, through satellites, many things which invoke temptations or produce temptations among youth. So there must be some way to prevent this and to diminish this pressure. So the society of today have two choices, either only permanent marriage and corruption, or to establish and pronounce permanent marriage as a lawful marriage in order to diminish this kind of pressure for the members of the society of today. Wasallallahu ala Muhammadin wa ahli baytihi al-athar.
I love Allah, I love Allah. To you too, to you too. What is Islam? What is Islam? Do you know? Do you know? It is five principles. It is five principles. Now do you know? Now do you know? La ilaha illallah. La ilaha illallah. Muhammadu Rasulullah. Muhammadu Rasulullah. That's the first principle. That's the first principle. Now do you know? Now do you know? The second one is called Salah. The second one is called Salah. We bring a mass for Allah. We bring a mass for Allah. That's the second principle. That's the second principle. Now do you know? Now do you know? We fast in Ramadan. We fast in Ramadan. We strengthen our iman. We strengthen our iman. That's the third principle. That's the third principle. Now do you know? Now do you know?
For the fourth, when we give zakah,
for the fourth, when we give zakah,
we do it for Allah.
We do it for Allah.
That's the fourth principle.
That's the fourth principle.
Now do you know?
Now do you know?
We'll go for Hajj, say inshallah.
We'll go for Hajj, say inshallah.
We'll say ya Allah.
We'll say ya Allah.
That's the first principle.
That's the first principle.
Now do you know?
Now do you know?
I know Islam.
I know Islam.
So do you.
So do you.
It is five principles.
It is five principles.
Now do you know? Now do you.
Precious know? Listeners, you heard Hujjatul Islam Dr. Bakhshayesh commenting on verse 24 of Surah An-Nisa. You can wait for the 26th episode on August 20th to listen to the closing interpretation of this verse. Don't forget to review our website at www.coiradio.com. Thanks again and goodbye.
فهو رحمن رحيم أنزل الشارع حنيفا رحمة للعالمين رحمة للعالمين إن سألتم عن كتابي فهو قرآن كريم ضم دستور الحياة وحوى نور المبين وحوى نور المبين If you ask me who my God is, on whose name I call, if you ask me who my God is, He's the God of us all, Allah the Merciful. If you ask me what my book is that I hold in my hand, if you ask me what my book is, it's the Holy Quran, the Holy Quran.